Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. We're at the National Equine Forum today, and my next guest is Dr. Barry Johnson. He's the independent chair on the Horse Welfare Board. He's also been a chairman for World Horse Welfare, and today he's giving a living example of British racing and how the social licence can impact us. Don't forget, you can join in with your questions. Just head to nationalequineforum.com. Hi Barry, can you tell us a bit more about your talk at the National Equine Forum today?
Yes, my section is how the racing industry is going to achieve its social license and the response that it has got to the demands of society that sport horses are continuously looked after throughout their lives.
Oh gosh, and what's your interest in this, Barry? Because you've got a long list of accolades, haven't you, to your name. You've been in the industry as an expert for a really long time. So what is it that particularly interests you about, the social licence and the racing industry?
I think to improve the welfare of horses generally is something that I've done all my life. And so therefore, I'm perhaps seen as an independent person. And there are two independent people on this board to try and be representative of the general public as opposed to people who are professionally in the industry.
And can you share with us some history of you, what you've done in your career?
I've just been a veterinary surgeon for 50 years, so I've done all sorts of things. The last thing, I started my own practice, and it's a very large practice in Lancashire. And then I've been chairman of World Horse Welfare. So I did that for about 10 years. And then I was asked to take on this role for a few years as chairman of the Horse Welfare Board, the racing industry.
And do you think that you're seeing a difference? You know, because Rolly was explaining about the social influence, really, as well, isn't it? It's the ethos behind a society of their core beliefs and their values. So, you know, I'm supposed to be unbiased, but I can't help but have an opinion. I'm definitely seeing a shift in the way that people treat horses, or the way that it's perceived. And I'm not sure if that's because we're just talking about it more. So more racing yards and trainers and coaches are coming out and saying, you know, we don't all abuse our horses. I actually really love my horses. Do you think that could be the case, or are you actually seeing a change?
I think all the people who look after the horses like you truly love working with horses, otherwise they wouldn't do it. But the general public now see horses as companion animals as opposed to being pack horses or working horses on farms. And therefore they want to know and ask questions. And I think the industry has been slow at explaining to the general public why they do things with horses, what benefits horses get from racing or being used in sport.
What do you think the benefits are for the horses?
Well, horses who are used, for whatever reason, show jumping, racing, whatever, tend to be far better looked after than those that are just turned away in a field with no use. If you look at most of the horses that are neglected in this country, the ones that are not, they don't have a use. So if they're used, then they tend to be fed well, looked after well, their feet looked after well, their teeth looked after, their disease control is a high standard, which wouldn't help if they're just living out in the fields.
I do agree with you. I just struggle with that point a little bit because I run a retirement yard. So none of our horses have a use, but they're all really well cared for because I'm just a bit soppy and I love horses too much. But I think
that's a slight difference because you're using them as companions and you're using them as horses and enjoying their company. That's different to just turning horses away and nobody looking after them, which does tend to occur.
You know, not everybody looks after retired horses, and I feel that it's quite a nice role for me to have, to know that, you know, they've served us really for so many years, that at the end of their life, the least we can do is look after them. But in terms of the social license then, the differences that you're seeing, what are they? What changes are you seeing?
Well, it's changes that we want to see. We want to try and improve the safety of horses when they're racing. We want to make sure that the quality of their life from birth through to the end of their life is a life well lived. And we want to try and make sure that we communicate this to the public, all the good that is done by people with horses, and explain why we do things and expose the myths where we get it wrong, but where we've got it right, explain why we do things.
There's a big gap, isn't there, between the racing industry and the equestrian industry. Do you feel that there's quite a big divide between the two?
I think historically there has been, but I think everybody realises now, both in racing and in other equine sports, that in fact they've all got to work together to try and achieve this social licence. And of course, the benefits from sport horses trickle down to horses lower down the scale. So the advances in technology of veterinary treatment, vaccinations, all trickle down to the small livery yards or retirement yards.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen a big shift in the last couple of years to attitudes towards infectious diseases. And I think, you know, there was a lot of hate for the racing industry a couple of years ago when we made the decision to put a stop on all the races to prevent the spread of the virus at the time. And I actually thought that was a great, brave, bold decision for the industry to say, no, you know, we want to protect our horses. And it really brought to the forefront biosecurity and the power that these infectious diseases have. And now this year, although we've had EHV, which hasn't been great, it's been controlled much quicker, I think, than in previous years.
I think drawing people's attention to biosecurity is something that the racing industry can do. And the registry has spent about 30 million in the last 20 years on research, the Animal Health Trust and various other research establishments. Because as horses move around the world more, the opportunity for new emerging diseases coming into this country from abroad is more likely. And the racing industry, through the levy board, is the only one that can really finance the research.
So why have you focused on the racing industry with your social licence? Is that because they can be leaders in how we look after our horses?
I think they can be leaders, but I think the other sports will probably follow suit and develop a strategy for welfare, because they need to do that to maintain the support of the public.
How do we change people's views? How do we change the social licence and to help people to look after their horses more, protect horses?
Well, I think that people do look after the horses. It's just that they're very negative in terms of discussing how they look after them with other people. And people are very challenged if you ask them about how they look after the horses. They're almost insulted that you bother to ask them.
That's interesting.
And there are problems facing eventing and show jumping with people protesting at the European Games, that not everybody is convinced that horses should be used for sport.
So are we hoping that we're going to maybe educate those people as well, or potentially change, I shouldn't say educate, that sounds really patronising, but change their minds?
I think just to be positive about what we're doing and explain all the care and attention that we all put into our horses, that we don't neglect them. And where there are cases of neglect, then something is done about it very quickly. But in general, most horses are very well looked after.
They are, aren't they? Do you have any? Do you still have horses?
I have one left who's a retired pointer. He's 18. He lives the life of Riley. He goes out every day, looks like a four-year-old.
It's hard, isn't it? Because whenever an animal is used as a job, it feels like we put them at risk, some form of risk. You know, horses that are used as mounted police horses, they go out and they're put at risks. Horses that are competed on cross country, you know, you're always taking a risk with them. It's the boundaries, I guess, and the levels of what's risk versus abuse. And I think the issues are it's with anything, again, when you're looking after animals, you've got your own standards. And I think we all have a very high standard over here for how we expect animals to be looked after and treated. But there's so many variations and variables with that. You know, there's a looking after your horse, but then there's using a really harsh mechanism to keep them under control. You've got a really tough job, Barry, not only in trying to help and support people to be looking after the horses, but also in general. You know, it's almost like there's no one size fits all for everybody.
There's always a risk. Whatever you do with a horse, there's a risk. All horse sport has an element of risk to it. And our job is to minimise that risk. Where it's avoidable, then we should avoid the risk. But there'll always be a risk with horses. And the research that Liverpool University did for the Horse Trust showed that 70-odd% of the injuries to horses were all done when they were turned in fields. And as you know, horses are very capable at injuring themselves just wandering around in a paddock.
Happens a lot on my yard. They don't even move that fast.
It's on everybody.
They still hurt themselves.
It's what horses are very good at. So there is an extra risk when we use them in sport. We've got to minimise that risk as far as we humanly possibly can. And we're working with the eventers and people to alter the hurdles and things. So we're using the knowledge and experience in other horse sports as well as those in racing.
It's making a great improvement. There is a feeling that there's a change.
The number of injuries are going down year on year. The number of fatalities are going down year on year. But we're not satisfied with that. We've got to get it even lower.
You mentioned earlier, you touched on being more supportive and more positive to each other. And I think a lot of the reason that people don't necessarily share how they look after their horses, because there's so many different ways of doing things and everybody seems to have an opinion, which is why I originally started doing these podcasts, because I had a horse and everybody told me that I was rugging it wrong or doing this wrong or doing that wrong. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to go and ask the experts. So that's why you're on today, because we want to know what, you know, what's the right way of doing things. But I guess maybe if this even trickles down to the everyday horse owner like me, you know, if we can be more supportive to our fellow equestrians, maybe the conversation will be a bit more open and maybe we can share ideas without the fear of feeling condemned for how we do things.
I think there's always a problem trying to explain to people how to look after the horses. It's a little bit like trying to tell them how to bring up their children or how to drive their cars. And they become very defensive. And we've got to be more open and more positive and congratulate each other when we do well on things rather than saying that people are doing things wrong. And there's no right and wrong way with a horse. We know things we shouldn't do and we know things we should do. But in between, there's a lot of variation.
With the change of this social license then and the impact that it's having on, you know, the undertone of society, really, as an industry, we believe that we want to care for the welfare of the horses is first and foremost. Do you feel that's putting pressure on people like the government and our industry bodies to push for more sanctions on people that don't look after their horses?
I certainly think that where people abuse their horses or misuse them, then there is pressure for them to be, for corrective measures to be brought into place. And with any regulation, if it's going to be effective, it's got to be behaviour changing. You know, so if there are laws against people doing things to horses, then they should be sufficiently strong to stop them repeating the offence again.
Thank you, Barry. Is there anything that you'd like to add?
Just that we hope everybody will read the strategy report, because there's a lot in it for everybody. And it's recommending changes to improve safety. It's recommending better lifetime cover, better traceability, and a consultation on the web.
Oh, now that will be good. Because what's the rules now? Is it nine times you're allowed to hit your horse?
Well, I think it's not so much the number of times, it's how you use the whip. The action of it, the type of whip you use. There's a long string of rules around it. And so we would suggest a consultation on those.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Do you know, I'd quite like to see the whip be removed completely. I really don't like it as an aid. I can't see how it can help. You know, I'm not a race trainer, but I can't see how it can help push that horse along. What do you think?
You'll join in the consultation then. It'll be an open consultation and you have every right to contribute to it. And I hope you do.
Really? How can I contribute?
Well, the BHA will run the consultation over the next few weeks and you'll be able to contribute to them.
Oh, Barry, thank you so much. How will we find out the results of the consultations?
They'll run for about 6 or 8 weeks.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Enjoy the rest of your day. I hope you enjoy the forum. We'll be able to watch your talk on the live stream. And if you head to nationalequineforum.com, you'll be able to see all the speakers of today's forum. Thanks so much, Barry.
Pleasure. Thank you, Amy. Nice to meet you.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can hear more podcasts from the National Equine Forum at their website, nationalequineforum.com. I speak to Abigail Turnbull from Richmond Equestrian Centre, who talks about how they survived strangles. I talk to Zach from the Behavioural Insights team on how we can change behaviour in the industry, and David Rendell, who talks about worming resistance. And you can see the live streams of every guest speaker at the National Equine Forum website. I'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.